This week, I'm joined by Denon Maximchuk, who is a relationship and a business coach. And in this episode, we really dive into some of the intricacies of relationships, of dynamics, of the energetics, of all the things that come up for all of us in relationships, as I discuss some of the things that I've recently been navigating in mine, and he shares some of the things in his. He really has a great set of insights when it comes to relational dynamics and explains them in a really clear and easy to understand way. And as usual on the Lost and Found podcast, we also take a little detour into some of the more philosophical and esoteric conversations. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. Before we get started, if you're watching on YouTube and you haven't yet subscribed, please do that because it really helps the channel. And lastly, the links to find both Denon and myself on Instagram will be in the description below. All right, that's it from me. I hope you enjoy the episode.
You know, as I was saying before we hit record, I like to kind of bring things that are alive in the moment into the podcast and the conversations and what's going on. And, you know, when I came across your Instagram, some of the relationship things you're talking about on there, I really resonate with, and I think is really valuable content and information. And I've recently been in this kind of wonderful new relationship that has had a whole lot of interesting unfoldings, things that have been very different, the way that it's come around, the type of person she is, the things that we share. And there's been some amazing opportunity for growth. And as we know, like that also means something else. There's amazing opportunities for growth on always rainbows and unicorns. So I thought, what a perfect opportunity to get into this that's alive with you today.
I see what you're doing. You're hooking me onto a coaching call through the form of a podcast, eh?
I'm sneaky like that, mate.
Love it. I love it. You know what? All the podcasts I go on tend to turn that sort of direction where people go, oh my goodness, I didn't realize that was me. So I look forward to whatever comes up in today's call. It's going to be fun, man.
Yeah, beautiful. It'd be great if you could give a little bit of background to the listeners about, you know, kind of what it is you do in the like relationship space, and maybe a little bit of background. I'd like to understand how you got to this place as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm actually never thought in my life that I'd be a relationship coach. And I became a coach as an accident. So my whole life, I've kind of been in the health and fitness industry. So originally, in my teenage years, I was a hockey player. I played at a pretty elite level here in way up north in old Canada. And I stopped playing hockey when I was about 18 because I was just too short. Coach went before one of our preseason games, right before Junior A was, he noticed I came straight from the gym. He's like, do you have a pump right now? I'm like, I do. And he goes, hey, man, you're going to have to choose between the fitness industry, the health industry, and hockey. I ended up deciding to go in the fitness and health industry because I'm like, damn, I'm too short. And I stayed in that space for probably almost a decade, really. And through that time, I was tried out different areas of focus. I was a personal trainer. I trained elite and professional athletes. And then I met a girl probably 4 and a bit years ago now. And we hit that off really, really well. And through some conversations, you know, we started dating. And then we started to realize that we had so many similar interests in the health space, in the biohacking space, whatever it may be. And we'd started to launch a one-to-one female health coaching business. Because we realize there's massive issues in the female health coaching scene. Many women are not represented in studies. Many women are not represented by the medical industry in general. So we decided to launch this business together. Little did I know this would be the lead-in to me eventually becoming a relationship coach, because this was my first introduction into running a business with a significant other. Things went very well for a long time, and we built a tremendous business together and ended up leading me also down another path of starting another business in business coaching, but from a more ethical and moral standpoint and how we can build business from a conscious consumerist stand. And although that started going well in that direction, we started to come into some serious challenges in our relationship. And quite frankly, we didn't have the awareness as to why. And much of that led me to then looking out for help. I needed help in so many of these areas because you don't know what you don't know until you find out what you don't know, is the old classic quote, right? And eventually we broke things off, and it was the most traumatic experience I've ever experienced. And I was useless for quite some time. The pain I felt didn't go away for quite a long time. And I started reaching out to coaches for some help. I was like, I want to know what I did wrong. I want to know what I can improve. And I need to understand relationships to the highest level degree because I never want to feel this pain again. So unfortunately, it came from, even the way I said it there, a place of lack, a place of scarcity, rather than I want to show up in my best in my relationships always moving forward. It came from a place of, oh gosh, I don't ever want to feel that again. But that was the emotional push that I needed to become obsessive, as I do in all the areas of my life that I can become obsessive in understanding human nature, understanding behavior, understanding love, things that we were never taught in our younger years, in our teens, and even our early adulthood. So for the past year and a half, I'd say, I've gone as hard as I can down this path of understanding, whether that be certain spiritual elements, energetic elements of love, to the behavioral side of it as well, and perhaps even the evolutionary psych side as well. So I've basically dedicated much of my time to that, and weird things started happening. As I was learning, people started reaching out to me, people that I hadn't talked to in many, many, many years, and just asking me random questions. Be like, hey, I'm having issues with this part of my relationship. Can you help me? And I was like, that's so strange. I'm learning about all these things right now, and I haven't talked to this person in many, many years. And one day I started realizing, I won't get into the details of it, but basically I had sold one of my businesses, and I basically stopped one of my other ones. So I had nothing going on, and I basically had the opportunity to rebuild my life. I had been building the courses for the business coaching, but I actually had nothing that I was currently working on. And then I started looking into counseling programs. I didn't actually end up biting on them, but the moment I started looking into these programs, I had a guy reach out to me and basically go, hey man, I'm thinking about ending everything. And it's over a girl, it's over a breakup. And that's when I started to realize, oh my goodness, I'm not the only person who's completely oblivious to not only themselves and oftentimes the energetic side of relationships, but just behavior in general and how we're supposed to love, how we're supposed to deal with these things. Now, obviously, I'm not a therapist. I need to put that out there legally. However, many of the things that I talk about with my clientele as a coach can be very therapeutic. So obviously, that person who was talking about ending things, he still needed to go and work with a counselor legally. However, it started to unlock kind of this chain of events that started to happen where he came to me, and then now a girl came to me, and then more and more people started coming to me, and I never once posted anything on Instagram. So weird, universal, everything seemed to be coming together moments, right? And at that point, I realized I feel like it's my duty, and I've realized this new purpose and this new stage of purpose in life would be to help people in these areas. So I started putting stuff out on Instagram. And with the marketing and creative backgrounds and all that, it popped off almost immediately. And now I'm where I'm at here doing this somehow for a living. It's kind of shocking how quick it's happened. And I'm incredibly grateful and I feel very, very lucky.
That's incredible, man. Beautiful story. And I think there's a huge pointer of something that, you know, a path that should be walked when things are unfolding in that way, where there's what just seems like just a natural unfolding. Like, it's like you're not pursuing it, it's pursuing you. And it sounds like that's kind of what happens.
Very well said. Yeah, exactly. That was exactly it. It was very strange. Never something I ever, man, I would have bet $1 million. I wouldn't be down this space, but here we are.
Yeah, beautiful. Actually, I have a similar kind of story within my own life. It's like time and time again, from I remember 12 years old specifically. When I was 12, one of my closest friends at the time, her younger brother died. He was only 9.
Wow.
And the only person she would talk to about it, and her parents would say, like, Sabri, you're the only person she would talk to about it. And then as I just kind of moved through life, these things would happen all the time. I remember one time being in Dubai on a bachelor party. and we were talking to some women at a bar, as you do, and I talked to this beautiful woman, you know, stunning, and I just kind of noticed a couple of things that she said, and I just kind of asked her about them, and, you know, 15 minutes later, she's crying, and she's saying, I'm not even told my husband this, and she's telling me all these things, and she's saying, this is going to change how I parent my kids. And these things would happen nights out at the gym. People tell me about like alcoholism, or the dad was like this, and they've never told like even the closest friends these things. And it was happening over and over and over. And you get to a point where it's like, I think there's something here that I'm meant to be doing because it keeps finding me.
It's kind of the prerequisite to any sort of work that we do with people. If, you know, A, you have to truly be interested, and B, do you already have that ability to kind of hold space and hold that leadership position where people kind of gravitate to you? I think any counseling or whatever school you decide to go to, that's usually one of the first questions they ask is like, hey, is this for you? And that's usually one of the first.
Just a quick one from me. Over the last 12 months, I've been working on the creation of a 6-month mastermind called Freedom Within. And I am really excited to say that it's going to be launching this January. The mastermind is dedicated to 3 different phases. The freedom from the past, where we let go of the things that really hold us back from being the truest essence of who we are, from past traumas, from limiting beliefs, and all of those things that weigh heavy on us throughout of our lives. Phase 2 is the freedom to be, to really be who you are. Once you let go of the ball and chain of the past, who are you truly in your fullest expression? And I believe that truly all of us just want to be the way that we're meant to be. And lastly, phase 3 is the freedom to become. From that place of wholeness, of feeling complete, of letting go of all the things from the past, who do you become? Not from a place of lack, not from the place of needing, but the way that an acorn yearns to become the oak tree, because that is what it's destined for. Throughout this process, you'll discover your unique gift, your talent, what it is that you want to share, that you want to birth, that you want to create, and discover what your true north is. What direction do you want to go in? And what would truly create the most beautiful and meaningful life for you? If that calls out to you, then I encourage you to hit the link below and register a free 30-minute discovery call where you and I will have a conversation and we can talk about how this program could benefit you, exactly what's involved over the 6 months. And there's so many exciting things that are involved in it, as well as special guests like Maestro Hamilton Souther, who is a dear friend of the podcast. So if this calls out to you, go ahead, hit the link below, schedule a call, find out more, and see if it's a good fit, and you can join the wait list ready to start in January, making 2024 the most meaningful and purpose-driven year yet. All right, that's it from me. Let's get back in to the episode. What do you feel like from the deep dive and study and the kind of the nature you have to go all in? What are some of the things that you've kind of found that you would say are the most kind of prevalent in misunderstanding for some people? And I know this is a huge spectrum and topic, but are there any things that immediately ping out to you where you feel like, if only people knew this? Is there anything that comes alive in that way for you?
Yeah, 100%. As soon as you started asking that, I was like, I think I know exactly. I've seen the pattern over and over again, and it comes down to awareness. And I know that's kind of like a people might roll their eyes like, oh God, what a little hippie woo-woo answer. But it's true. Awareness starts to cover everything. Yeah. Most people are so unbelievably unaware of themselves that it's very hard for them to be consciously present and actually with their partner in most situations. And what I mean by this is most people are highly reactionary, and reactivity is pretty much the source of most people's issues in relationships. It's their inability to emotionally regulate. It's their inability to, you're smiling like I already know something's going to come up. but especially for men, I would say emotional reactivity is probably the source of your, I'd say lack of masculinity, quite frankly. And it's very hard for you to hold that safe and secure place, especially for a woman in a relationship, when you are in a reactive state all the time. However, in the current society that we are in, most people are in a reactive state. It's, you know, this ADHD society of constantly just things happening. And we're always like, does your phone buzz? And are you immediately taken off of topic by that and then go over to it? Or are you consciously aware of, I can get to that in 5 minutes? It stems to a very, very deep level of, I would say, not only lack of awareness, but lack of personal control. So oftentimes when conversations in a relationship, whether that's a difficult conversation or not, many times these things are going to lead to our immediate reactions that we've learned over time. And I mean, these habit loops get created where we, something happens in our life, all the way from, you know, learning how to walk. Step one is there's the action, there's whatever happens. Step two is we have to create some sort of response to the action. And then step three is our brain goes, hey, that turned out well. That put us in a place that is, we think, perceived as good. And now we have a habit loop created. And this happens for everything in our life, whether that's early life learning, whether that's early adult life learning, how we respond to situations, conversations, or anything. We very quickly go into our human conditioning. And most people are incredibly unaware of their own human conditioning and why those things are in place. So a relationship example of this would be a woman decides to bring up a difficult conversation with a guy around money, but he grew up very poor. And because he grew up poor, he has this immediate emotional reaction inside of him the moment that there's some sort of scarcity brought up in the relationship, or his perceived version of scarcity in the relationship. And he starts to become emotional, reactive, and all of these things start coming up. He believes that these are just things that are normal to get emotional and angry or start to get upset about, or at least, you know, he's starting to push the red line to the point where the wires are going to cross at all times. He sees that as normal. That's due to a lack of awareness in many cases of the fact that, oh, this is caused and stimulated by this cascade of events that led from here. And I think when people can really deeply get a better awareness of themselves, they're able to then start to create space between the reaction, or I should say the thought or the emotion, and then the reaction. But most people, I know most people aren't probably watching on screen, but I'm using my hands to show the gap in the space between the emotion or the thought and the reaction. Most people have a hairline of a space between the thought and the emotion, and then whatever our conditioned reaction is. And when we can start to not only increase our awareness, and there's many, many different ways to do this. Obviously, you've got your mindfulness exercises and, you know, here we go down the woo-woo path again. But we want to increase that gap so that we can subvert it, move off of that, and then instead make a response instead of a reaction. And that's just kind of, I would say, a very general way of going about looking at one of the most common patterns that I see, because most people are not able to A, be aware of their own human conditioning, and then B, make the conscious choice in the moment to be aware of when it starts to come up so that they can move around it.
Amazing, man. Yeah, amazing share. Thank you for that. And just to let you know, like, we're a big fan of Woo Woo on the podcast.
I know. So, I see that picture behind you. I was like, you're going to identify with what I'm saying here. I love it.
My path is pretty funny.
When I talk about energy or any of these things, because I've noticed also a pattern is, and I know your community is going to be very open to these things, but I do just kind of want to be cautious around those, just because I do find many people shut off very quickly to certain words or phrases. And it's, I don't want the words that I use to be the barrier to connecting with somebody, which is why you go onto my Instagram, the only extent you'll see into that space is talking about masculine and feminine energy. But I'm also very clear to talk about how these things are, for example, characteristics of a broader spectrum, not, you know, this thing that you can't see. It's more so a classification of characteristics. And I just find it's important to talk about it that way. So we're going to talk about things that I don't even usually go into on my IG.
I like that, man. Yeah, I mean, you know, just to give you a feel of the woo-woo, I've 100% experienced and like a felt channeling where I've done hours of writing that wasn't my thoughts. Ayahuasca and plant medicine have been part of my journey for the last 7 years. I've been training with Maestro Hamilton Souther to facilitate plant medicine ceremonies. So I'm in the woo-woo. I'm all the way in. I
felt a hug from the universe in meditation the other day. I ain't gonna be saying that on my IG.
amazing. Yeah, I really like what you said there about awareness. And you know, I host a free, like, kind of weekly community call just for people that are interested in these types of conversations. And yesterday, the topic I kind of evoked and brought in was, you are not the voice in your head. Mm. And most people, they don't realize that the voice and the thoughts that they have, they don't realize that's not them.
Mm.
And when most people have the thoughts, and it's so tempting, that voice, it is a fucking master of deception to make you think that these thoughts are you. And of course, when I think I am those thoughts, I am that voice, that hairline that you spoke about. And for most people, I think that's generous. The hairline of reactivity is actually generous, because when I think that voice is me, bam, it's immediate. And one of the things I was talking about yesterday is that, you know, if we can learn to observe that voice or those thoughts as a voice, and the thoughts that arises in us but is not us, that we are the observer or the witness, then it really helps. But something you said then, which I think is really important to know, is that when we're actually emotionally triggered or activated, the ability to see the thoughts, it's like, it's now, it's the difference of like kind of playing with like pretend guns versus I'm now actually in the war zone and the bullets are flying at me. And can I stay cool and calm in that scenario and allow that break, that moment between, okay, I'm feeling this stuff, can I be with that for a moment before I react? And that, just that one thing alone, is hugely beneficial. But
oh man, very difficult. Save 95% of relationships. The stupid shit that you regret saying that one time, all of the things that come out in those moments where you are no longer in control, you've separated and you've separated from consciousness and you've started to re-identify with the person, essentially, the human physical body, all hell breaks loose when you start to lose that awareness, that the watcher space, the third party space.
Yeah.
I'd say that's the common pattern.
And, you know, it's funny. It's great because, and the reason I smiled before, you know, you said, you know, it's a smile. I've literally been having to exercise this today. And actually, I'm very glad with how it went. So I'm in a new relationship, and we met at, are you familiar with Dr. Mark Gaffney?
No.
Okay. He's he's certainly a genius. He's the president of the World Center of Philosophy and Religion, and his Aubrey Marcus's like main kind of teacher at the minute, and him and Aubrey are hosting an event together next year. He's been on Aubrey's podcast a lot. And Mark is a teacher of mine. I'm part of the center there. I was with them in Vermont in June and in Belgium. And Mark is, you know, doctorates in philosophy from Oxford, and he's written 25 books on human existence. He's writing this great library. Actual, like, legitimate genius. I've not come across many people like him ever. Like, have you heard of Ken Wilber?
I feel like I should know all these people that you're telling me about. I'm so interested. I'm going to write down some notes. I have not heard of Ken.
Ken is, you know, Mind Valley?
Yes.
Yeah. So I forget the founder's name of Mind Valley, but he refers to Ken as, he believes Ken's the greatest living philosopher on earth. And wow. Ken and Mark do a lot of things together. So this is a draft of a book they're doing together, First Principles and First Values of Evolving Perennialism. And it's Mark Gaffney, Dr. Zach Stein, Ken Wilber. And it's a pretty heavy read, like 0.23.
You got your hands on it pre-release?
Yeah.
Oh, you are in that space, hey? Good for you.
0.23, the common sense sacred axioms have not survived the postmodern collapse of value. A reconstruction of value is necessary. That's the title. of 0.23. It's like some, they're real intellects and what's the word I'm looking for? Scholars, like. Anyway, I was at an event with Mark, as well as that, he's also a rabbi, but his thing is in the Kabbalistic Hebrew mysticism traditions. So super interesting guy. Anyway, I was at one of his events at his mystery school, and I met this wonderful woman there. It was actually the first person I met in the airport before we even went to the event. And there was just this like immediate intrigue. I could sense that there was a capacity and a depth within her that really stood out to me. And, you know, every night, I think the earliest we were up talking to was like 2 or 3 a.m.
Wow, beautiful.
We just hit it off. We really did. She's from the States. I'm living over here in England. And then, you know, within kind of 6 weeks, she was over here, and she was here for 2 weeks. She flew back, came back like a week later for 3 weeks, went back, came back again. And she is here now. And it's been amazing. And like, there's so much wonderful things I could say about her. But also, it's been this, like, there's, as with every relationship, these opportunities that things arise, things come up. Now, for me, as much kind of work as I've done, I've really been in the space of doing a lot of inner work. I'd say I began 21 years ago when I started listening to Wayne Dyer and reading philosophy then. And, you know, it's been a good journey. But I certainly had, you know, a fearful avoidant attachment style, you know, a turbulent, unstable kind of, like energetically, both parents were there, but my dad, bless him, was very reactive and emotional and volatile, like you know, snapping the fingers, and you know, those kind of things definitely created this disorganized, I don't know where I stand, is it this, is it that, attachment style. And whilst I've got a lot of awareness and see a lot of the things, and generally speaking, in most of my life, it really doesn't arise, like, you know, hardly ever. But when we get into those intimate relationships, they're the times where we get challenged, or anything that's left, anything that still needs ringing out, is like, that's what's going to get it. And I guess, you know, we had a few days of some turbulence, and it led to some conversations that I feel unsettling, you know, with my body. Anyway, today, this morning, I really had to kind of just be willing to be nailed to the cross. And I was like, I want to really hear everything. And I wanted to enter into that conversation in a space where it's like, I want to look for everywhere you're right rather than where you're wrong. So I feel no need to defend, in the deepest knowing that I am intended, that I am like actually intended by reality. I am meant to be here, that all of me is meant to be here. All of me is okay. And with that said, tell me any of the things where you think I've been missing the mark, where I've been doing things that have caused some type of distress. Like, let me hear it. So she's been trying to say some things for a few days about some patterns. And I thought I heard, I wasn't hearing. This morning, I really got it. I really heard it. And I could feel, there was the moments where I felt the want to be like, ah, yeah, but you, or like, or to defend, or to say, where like in some ways it wasn't right. And I would notice that voice, and it wasn't just the voice, I'd feel it in my body. And then I would override it with, no, look for where she's right. Look for where she's right. And then I could, and then I actually really truly heard what she was saying. I really got it. And I could tell she got that I got it. So we did that. And then a little later, something else arose today, which wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but my nervous system's felt a little like this over the last few days, you know, a little unsettled. And then, you know, something came up a little earlier, and similar kind of feeling. And, you know, I'm not used to having these sensations arise. It's been a while. And I was like, oh man, it's there again. So I just kind of said to her, like, okay, I said, like, I'm just feeling a lot here in my body, and I just want to really stay present and be able to have a conversation around in this way. And she's amazing. She's an incredible coach as well. So she actually like held space for me in an amazing way. And she just really kind of read it perfectly. And Literally, it ran right through to like 2 minutes before I hopped on. We started the podcast.
You're fresh.
But the... Oh, yeah. Fresh. But it's when that feeling is really arising, when it's really arising, to actually be able to override it and to be like, okay, I can be with this. I can be with this. And I trust that in getting through this, there's going to be a dimension that I unlock that wasn't there before, which is going to allow for more growth, for more intimacy, for more connection, for more love. And but it's hard. It is so difficult, even for people that are like really deep in this realm, that really focus on it, that teacher that are doing all of it. And sometimes we don't want to admit, we almost don't want to admit, like, oh, I fuck up too. I miss the mark as well. I think sometimes we all want to make out like, I've got this sorted. I've got it. But yeah, I've had one of those days, one of those few days. So yeah, it's kind of fitting that we're having this podcast and we're doing this show today.
I'd say one of the blessings and the curses of being kind of a bit more of a conscious person, I would say, is the fact that you are also aware of these things and where you should be. It's like your higher self is always talking to you in that moment, and you're kind of just like, you know, fuck youing it a little bit in the moment, because you're just like, hey man, I'm trying my best, and it's still gnawing at you. And I can understand how sometimes ignorance is bliss. However, we'll never grow from that. And that's kind of the trickiest thing. I'm constantly, especially if you're a highly analytical person, as it kind of seems like you are, we can get really deep in the moment, not only in the moment with that person, but with ourselves at the same time. So not only are we in a fight with them, we're in a fight with ourselves. And we're just trying to keep all of these entities in safe mode so we can actually move forward in a way that's going to be productive for everybody. And that is tricky. And it's even trickier, I would say, for guys. Because a lot of the time in this society, especially in cases for like you and I, where perhaps the partners that we choose to be with are going to be a little bit more open and aware of these things, it's difficult for us to have the tendency to want to be able to open up to them in ways that perhaps could also have an effect on our masculine frame. That's where things get really tricky, because striking the balance between still being able to not subconsciously alter with our partner our ability of that strong masculine person who is able to be that safe place for them, while also still being able to be open and communicative enough about what we're going through, and finding the balance between how much do I use them as a sounding board, how much do I bring to them, versus how much do I just simply communicate to them, but then take my troubles and all these things to another person, such as a coach, in order to process it somewhere else other than the relationship. And I think that's hard to find that balance. A, for most people, they're completely unaware of the fact that, hey, I should not be processing, most men specifically, I shouldn't be processing these really deep problems that I'm having with my partner, because I have to be that safe and secure place for her. And oftentimes it's not your fault. This is more of, you do have to look at the girl for this, or your partner for this. If she is not able to separate herself and realize that, oh, you know, this person is going through some things, usually it has a subconscious effect on them. And they're unable to really unsee your vulnerable side, which can long-term have an effect on some people's relationships. In fact, most women in society nowadays are there hammering the drum for, they're trying to approach men's mental health. And I know we're not specifically talking about men's mental health on this podcast, but I do think, given the fact that we're two guys, it's easier to talk about. But they're kind of beating the drum for, if men were more vulnerable, all of these problems would go away, which is essentially very much like the entire, I would say, therapy and counseling space. Not the entire thing. I shouldn't say things in totality. But over 70% of counselors and therapists are female. So they're approaching male problems from a female perspective. We don't operate the same. There's a reason why oftentimes talk therapy doesn't work for the high majority of men. And the high majority of men that commit suicide even while they're in counseling or therapy, is in the high 90% because of the fact that that approach is not as great for men. We need more action strategies. We need to be able to go to, oftentimes, guys, to be able to talk about things and take immediate action. It's not the same. So most men, A, don't realize that I need to process these challenges that I'm facing outside of the relationship. However, I still need to be able to communicate to my person about these challenges I'm having. Yeah. That can cause a lot of relationship tension and breakdown in general that most guys and girls are not aware of. Most women think they're emotionally equipped to handle a man's challenges when, quite frankly, they're not. And it's kind of hard to understand that because, again, you don't know what you don't know until you find out what you don't know. But oftentimes it's the good old classic, you know, you want to know something about your partner and then you find out, you're like, shit, I wish I didn't ask. And many times these are, it doesn't have to be always the, hey, you know, how big was your ex kind of thing. But oftentimes it can be the insecurities or things that we just don't know how we're going to respond to that if we are going to be emotionally equipped to handle with it. Yeah. And that's not exactly obviously what you're going through. However, my kind of connect to that would be that when you are in that conscious space, it's a little bit harder, especially to find that balance with that partner, because you know that they can heal, if you want to say that, a lot of the things that you're going through, but is it a safe place to go to truly long term? And that's kind of that's the tough part, I think, that most of us have to go through.
Yeah, I really like that. You know, what came up when you were saying that there is, I wonder if there's like a correlation between if the conversation is circular, meaning is it the same thing that keeps coming up? Is the person's same issue versus is it actually spiraling upwards, meaning issue was raised and then actually over a week or however long the partner sees, oh, there's actually been a shift here. And I feel like if there's maybe progression seen in the thing that's being brought up, maybe it can be held a little more differently and they can actually trust because, okay, issue, thing brought up, but it's not just same thing week after week, same problem, same things. Because I imagine that becomes now actually, how much can I trust my partner? Because they wanted to talk about this thing and nothing's changing versus, oh, we spoke about this thing and actually now I see there's actually been in the clarity, the clarification of what the issue was, he's actually owned it. There's been a shift. There's been a change. I can trust him.
100%. I mean, there's consistency is key, both in failures and benefits, right? And that's kind of where if you are the guy who is constantly going to your woman, assuming this is a heterosexual relationship, if you're a guy who's constantly going to your female partner week after week, day after day, saying, oh, I just hate my job and oh, I just wish my back didn't hurt. And it's just this constant whining, essentially, and complaining. Complaining in general is a very much non-masculine trait. She kind of expects you to deal with that, take action on it and show that you're doing that. And if you're constantly going back to and using her as the sounding board for the same problem over and over again, that should be a cue to you that you're not taking enough action on that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, something that I've mentioned on the podcast before, which, you know, forgive me to the listeners that have heard this already, but, you know, one of the things that we went through at Mark Gaffney's mystery school, he was talking about line and circle and how before masculine and feminine, there's line and circle, and line is masculine, circle is feminine. And that he went through the qualities of each 10 qualities of line and circle, each of which in their like kind of clarified way and each in their shadow. And it was really fascinating how he spoke about the unique configuration that everyone has of line and circle energy. And that it actually is really helpful because it allows us to break away from some of the assumption of male, masculine, woman, feminine, and start to see, oh, I have these line and circle qualities. And he goes into, I mean, just how his mind works. He'll go down to like, he'll show how cells are formed under a microscope and you'll see literally these line and circle qualities within them. And it's kind of wild how he points to literally all of the universe is line and circle. And how he breaks it down is pretty fascinating.
When you say line and circle, do you mean like the line represents the masculine? I assume rigid, structured, and the circle is feminine,
flowy, more freeform, less edgy. Yeah.
So he's saying before masculine and feminine, there was line and circle, and that each line and circle have qualities to them. And then we can then say these are more feminine, these are more masculine. But
yes,
the thing that he kind of talks about is that everyone, like every person, is a unique configuration of line and circle qualities, and that no two people don't have the same fingerprint, don't have the same configuration of line and circle qualities and energy. And it's pretty fascinating, actually, getting into
100%, that. I agree. 100%. I think one of the challenges that most people face, especially nowadays, due to the fact that I'd say almost everybody, but especially young folk, are learning what they think is love and relationship tips primarily from the internet. So oftentimes they quickly go down these rabbit holes where perhaps they connect really well with this one video of that one person saying that one thing over that certain audio sound. Next thing you know, they're getting this tremendous amount of input from the algorithm that pushes them down these like black pill, red pill pages, maybe like the Sigma male pages. And then they start to get this onslaught of information that they think is facts, that they think is this is correct, because that's all they're being fed. And obviously now that they're in their own echo chamber of the algorithm, they just assume that this is reality. And this is how people are learning a lot of these tremendously flawed versions of what they think being a man is. And then they think that every single man is just purely 100% masculinity, right? And they don't understand that it's very much like the yin yang, where we have, for I would say 80% of men, you go back to the GS Youngbloods, you know, the David Datas and all those guys, and they were kind of the original guys talking about like the inner core versus outer core. There's an inner core that we are primarily, doesn't mean 100%, but we are primarily that mostly, again, looking at the yin yang, mostly the either masculine or the feminine. And then there's that little dot of the opposite energy that helps to balance us. And without that, that's when we become quote unquote toxic, as the kind of popular media would say. And then we have our outer core, which is the outer core would be the part of our energy that we are able to adapt to the situation around us. And this could be, for example, if you went to go take a cold tub, a cold shower or something like that, you know, it's going to take the characteristics of the masculine strength and the courage to step into that cold shower. However, it's also going to take your feminine surrender and patience and care and nurturing to be able to sit in that for 3 or 4 minutes at a time. And when we start to kind of classify some of these things in our life and go, oh, okay, there is quite a bit of balance, even in the same moment of these actions that we do. Yeah. You're not just this hardcore David Goggins, stay hard, motherfucker. You know, we're not going to be just that hardcore masculine that the internet is purveying out to the world. That's not correct whatsoever. We do have both. We do need to nurture both. And again, coming back to the very first topic, awareness. I'm very much a balanced core. It's just very easy terms to say that person, where I have very many masculine tendencies in my life. However, I've got a lot of feminine built into me as well. We were joking beforehand that I can cry at the drop of a pin. I literally yesterday, I saw the cutest freaking video of this. It was a little boy playing in the backyard with his neighbor's husky. It was like a snowy day and the husky was bored. And he hopped the fence and they started playing together. I just started welling up in the eyes. Same day, there was, I see this video all the time. It pops up in my algorithm now because I watch it so often. But there's a little girl going up a ski lift with her dad and she drops her back, or he drops his backpack. And she's like consoling him. She's like, it's okay, dad. We can go get it. We're the rescue riders. And I just well up every single time I see that. And a part of me, I don't know if it's my biological clock or what, but I'm like, man, I kind of want kids right now. And it's things like that where I can shame myself for, dude, what the fuck? You know, a masculine man wouldn't sit here and get all cryy while he's sitting on the toilet looking at Instagram videos. And I could shame myself for all of these things that are coming up. Or I could have the awareness to go, oh, these are things that mean a lot to you. Oh, you do have these tendencies. Or another one would be, I'm actually, although I'm very much a leader and I'm very much, especially when it comes to business and life, I like to have control of the direction of where my future family or wherever that goes. I'm very much attracted to a feminine woman who also has her masculine side of being driven. I like having a partner in my life who is not just a purely feminine surrendering. And I know the word surrendering can become very tricky for some people, but what I mean is having her basically fall into my leadership and become like this goo of ability to, you know, do her hobbies and all these things. I like a woman who's driven. And based on what the internet talks about these days, that's horrible. You don't want a boss bitch, as they oftentimes say. No. That's toxic femininity. And it's like, well, that's not true for everybody. And in fact, I find that highly attractive. So coming back to the very first point of awareness, when you can go deep enough on yourself on many of these things and start to become aware enough throughout the day of perhaps some of the actions you do or the things that you relate with or whatever you may connect with, you start to realize, oh yeah, we are a beautiful blend of both. But at our core, there certainly is more of a tone, a nervous system tone in our body that we will gravitate towards.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just generally speaking, from our hormone balances that promote certain types of behaviors, like we're going to have those. So within our kind of hardware, there are those things, right? And then every single person has their own kind of a unique software of like our experiences, things that we're kind of, that we're allured to. And yeah, like I'm the same. And I found that over time, for me, I could sense that part of my journey was there was parts of myself that I'd cut off from and rejected and abandoned. Mm. I didn't feel like that part was okay to exist within me. And then as I've kind of gone through my own personal journey of reclaiming those parts and in the reclamation, it's like more joy, more playfulness, more tears, like more of those things were brought back in. And it wasn't that I wasn't those things, it's that I wasn't allowing them. So, you know, when I was in my early 20s, I mean, I was like a lifelong martial artist. I owned a martial arts school. I'd competed in bodybuilding in my early 20s. So I was like, you know, big skinhead, teaching people to punch and kick for a living. That was like my thing. And actually, even then, I was still deeply into like kind of philosophy and personal growth, but in a certain way. And it was, there was more of the success driven type of like growth mindset. And then just as I've kind of softened and moved beyond thinking that that's what I have to be, because actually you can end up creating a rod for your own back, because I created very much a visual representation of that. So then people expect you to be that. So then you end up then playing out a pattern and being a certain way because you now think, well, that's what people expect from me. So I've got to be that. And, you know, when I was in my early 20s, it's like if we're out in a group and there was like any type of confrontation, the kind of the look would be to me is like how I was going to react or what I was going to do about it. And I was always, and I was quick to like step into those confrontations.
Bro, you got your nunchucks.
Getting out the cameras with my bow staff. Yeah,
pull up the side. That's so funny you said. You and I are actually very similar, and I'm laughing at that. I was like, man, you're my European brother from another mother. I grew up, my dad owned the dojo, and I grew up in the dojo. And then in my early 20s, I was like highly competitive in men's physique as well. And like I've traveled to the Arnolds and all these things. And it's so I'm very much aligned with you in that, where it's really funny how quickly we allow those things to become our identity. And even to this day, I very much struggle with that. When I'm in the gym, I see people who maybe knew me back in the day or back followed me back when I was like the douchey fitness guy. And I still very much like, I get a little, I don't weigh what I used to. I'm like 20-ish, 25 pounds lighter than what I used to be. And I notice when it comes up in me, and I notice that, and I go, hey man, it's like, they're not judging you. It's okay. Like, you're able to let that go a little bit. And it's very hard that, what's the term for it? Not imposter syndrome, but, body dysmorphia. Like when the body dysmorphia starts to kick in, I'm like, oh wow, that's interesting. That's still in there. But again, as long as you're aware of it, you will not allow it, hopefully as often, to start to integrate in with your actions as much. So I very much relate with you on that.
Yeah, man. And it doesn't surprise me, you know, it doesn't surprise me that we have those commonalities, because when I was looking at your content, I was like, oh, I feel this guy. And normally when that happens, like, oh, I feel this person. normally it turns out like, oh, we've got all these things in common. So I'm actually not surprised.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. I think recently, actually, since my partner and I have been training together, because she really enjoys lifting, and I have had a torn cartilage in my knee for a few years now. It does actually need surgery. I keep putting it off. So my legs have just definitely shrunk over time. I kind of joke, I do like an annual leg session.
to get the stir sticks going on.
But we've been training together recent, and as you know, a lot of women love training lower body. So we've been doing legs like twice a week. I've been doing hip thrusts, and it's actually the first time in a long time I've seen significant strength increase. So I think on Monday I was hip thrusting like 500 pounds for 10 reps. And she did basically 400 pounds for 6 reps. Like, pretty impressive.
And who's got the bigger peach?
Yeah,
it's actually crazy that you start training more glutes and you start to realize how much of your body gets put together. I mean, the lumbopelvic hip complex, going back to my old training days, like how important that is for not only your core and low back strength, but all of a sudden, like you start to walk upstairs and you're like, whoa, I got a little spring in my step. It's it goes a long way.
Yeah, well, I actually noticed that everything, like systemically, my strength has been increasing. I mean, I was really strong in my early 20s. And I've had some bad injuries. I've had a complete pec tear. I've had a lat tear. Ooh. I've had a hamstring tear. This pec actually isn't properly attached anymore.
It's
this side, which is like quite thick. This side is like, is that.
What are you training, like Branch Warren?
Oh man, yeah. I used to like, my heaviest bench, I've got a video of me doing one rep on, it was 200 kg. So it's like 440 pounds.
Wow.
I used to fly with 44 kg dumbbells. So I don't know what that is. It's like 90 something pounds.
That's egregious. That's what that is.
Yeah, I used to like, that. I was 23. I was moving some heavy, heavy weight. And I felt indestructible in my early 20s. And now, you know, like you said, like now I literally can't bench more than a plate and a half. And I used to literally go one plate 20, two plates 15, three plates 12, four plates 10, four and a half plates 7. And then I'd kind of work up to that kind of.
Well, you know, some of our mutual friends and acquaintances, one of the coaches that I worked with was Justin Lovato. Still do. He's a great, great friend. Absolutely love the guy. Love him like a brother. And he used to be like the quad father, I think they called him, or something like that, at the Gold's Beach Venice. He was one of the head trainers there, and he used to squat hundreds and hundreds of pounds. And his rule now is he doesn't go over 225 pounds on squats. The guy's an absolute animal. He's a damn tank. But even for long-term health, he's like, probably more risk versus reward. And he cuts it off. So I'm like, well, if he can do it, then I can do it.
Yeah, exactly that. But like you say, your identity gets so entwined. And because of the injuries I've had, it kind of, I know there's no way I can, like literally, it'd be impossible for me to try and move the weight that I used to. So it's like, got to let that go.
Almost a blessing, honestly, in some ways. It's like you are forced to. It's tough when it's like your body's in a good shape and you're like, I could probably still do it.
Yeah. Where
we're still bro out for the next 2 hours.
Yeah, and that's always the best way. It's how I like the shows to go, to be honest. But you were talking about when people see something on social media and then that creates the echo chamber. What I thought in that was really interesting is that, and I was thinking this recently, we all have like a cognitive bias, and there's a whole like RAS, the reticular activating system, where we kind of find things that confirm what we already believe or think. So for a lot of people, the actual relationship advice that they decide that the echo chamber is created out of is something they already resonated with, which might be supporting a belief that's completely inaccurate and not serving them, but it might actually serve like an egoic or wounded part of them. Like the red pill thing, which is like kind of like It seems like his guy is just mainly like hating women. I think that's right. I think it's red pill.
I don't even know what color the pills are anymore, but I can characterize the archetypes very well for you.
Yeah.
You're 100% right on that. Okay, keep going. You had more to that, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it's just interesting that we then, based upon, we find information that could serve us in a way, but what part of it is it serving? Is it serving like capital I, like higher self, or is it kind of serving my lower self that wants some kind of confirmation of like why I see the world this way? Is it actually reaffirming the reason I feel hard done to and a victim? And if so, we then start consuming that, and then we get shown more of that in our feed. That creates the echo chamber. And yeah. Like
it's
you
like
said,
two echo chambers in one. It's like there's our internal echo chamber, because if people, by the way, where I was going to say, and I totally forgot earlier, was you're the only person I've ever spoken with on a podcast or any, even in life, who's brought up the RAS, the reticular activating system. I'm very impressed by that, because most people don't understand that it even exists. And if people don't know what that is, the RAS, the reticular activating system, it essentially is our body's internal radar. And what it does is a radar can only search for things it's been programmed to search for. And, you know, we see a radar on TV or in movies. It searches for, let's say, a submarine radar searches for maybe it's certain frequencies in the water that it starts to ping on this screen that people are looking at. And very much the same thing in our body. But the trick is your radar has to be programmed to search for those things. Very much how your algorithm has to be programmed. It searches for things that it thinks you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And there's ways that we can control this in our life. I mean, right now on the other side of this computer, I've got this large vision board in front of me, and I've got the truck that I want. There's the land that I want. There's a beautiful image of my future family, I hope, on there. The home that I want, the trips I want to go on, and a whole bunch of other things. I'm subconsciously programming my brain to look for those things. And some of you will know this on a much more physical way of like, if you've been through a breakup, and your ex-girlfriend drove a specific vehicle, maybe it was a little red Honda Fit, you will always see those little red Honda Fits. Every single time you see one of those cars, your heart sinks a little bit, and you get that little bit of a flutter, at least for the first little while. But even over time, you see that car, and you will recognize those cars more than your very first car, because there's so much more of an emotional attachment to that. That's your own internal reticular activating system. And there's lots of them. You probably have hundreds of these little programs, but that's one of the versions of the way that if we can be so emotionally tuned to truly what we're looking for, and that's conditioned, which is where it gets tricky with the social media, you will continuously search out or at least be aware of that. It's the classic, there's the marketing book. I'm trying to see if I can see it from here. Seth Godin, The Purple Cow. Right? It's like, don't think of the purple cow. You immediately think of the purple cow. Where it actually comes to retraining those systems, that's very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's, and it's pretty wild how it works. And even just like to your initial point, awareness, even having awareness that that is what is going on. And if it makes sense, if you think about it, it's like a filtering system. We can't possibly take in everything that our sense perceptions are absorbing throughout the day. So it's just like, no, relevant. No, yeah. Relevant. Otherwise, we'd just be an absolute information overload. Mm-hmm. But when you realize that is how it works, and you know what you said then about the information we find on social media, you know, this actually, I started thinking about this a couple of nights ago when my partner brought up a teaching of David Ada, actually, and saying why she liked it. And I was thinking, I wonder if like part of that, the reason she liked that thing in particular is because she already feels that thing to be true. And what I noticed was she was actually pointing out a thing that I did that very day that she liked, and it was a thing of his. And what was funny is, have you heard of the term inner citadel?
Yes.
Yeah. I felt like, I think what's going, because I do this, you know, there's an interaction that happens, and then I try to zoom out and go, what was going on there? And I was thinking, I think she kind of resonated with that because it's like RAS type thing, kind of confirming something that she already kind of felt and believed to be true. And I think even though she said, I did it, I have somewhat of an inner citadel around the things she was talking about, where I kind of had some resistance to it, even though she was saying that it's a thing that I did, and she was saying it in a really positive way. There was actually a little resistance there to the teaching. And then I was kind of like approached it kind of in a skeptical manner. And I just thought it's so interesting how we have these inner kind of programs and systems that are working. And for people that don't understand what an inner citadel is, it's like, if, for example, not saying that all people that are overweight, this is what it is.
Go there.
there's definitely somewhat of a movement of like, it's easier to say I'm happy not being in good shape than what it is to get in good shape. And if I feel like I can't get in good shape, to say, actually, I don't want to be in good shape. I'm really happy being like this. It might not be that I'm actually happy being like this. However, it's easier to abandon the thing that you might want and is difficult than it is to say, I find it really hard. You know, so it's easier to kind of like abandon that and say, don't want it anyway, than what it is. Not saying that's the case for everybody. And there are some, I'm sure there's a whole load of people that are really satisfied in whatever shape they're in. But that could be a good example that I actually used to do before I kind of turned to bodybuilding and started doing that. There was that kind of like, I'm not bothered about that. Or like I'd kind of put down the guy that was in good shape because that wasn't me. And actually, it's because it's what I wanted, but it was easier.
And all of a sudden you're going down the YouTube rabbit hole of natty or not videos.
Yeah. If you have to ask, I mean.
I don't know. I had a friend, her name is Brooke Piggin. She recently went pro, and she was completely natural until going pro. And I've seen some things happen that I'm like, that's really impressive what the human body can go through. But anyways, that's a whole other topic. We're going to go down the pro side again.
and in fairness, you know, when I say if you have to ask, that was a joke. Because actually what I would say to other people, I know people when, you know, I was competing and I've done anabolics and what the friends had, and there'd be someone who claimed to be natural, but like, there's no way that he can be. And I'd be like, Here's what's true. There's no way I can look like that naturally. Mm-hmm. Like, I can admit that, but this guy might just be a genetic specimen. And like, if so, fair play. Well done.
Yeah. Just like the energies inside of us, right? We are built up of our own unique makeup. So you just never know.
And actually, that'd be another good example of kind of the inner citadel thing that's going on, right? Is like, you know, a similar type of thing. But anyway, going back to that conversation, it was interesting to see how I think there's some type of like cognitive bias and RAS thing going on, which, by the way, not to say that the teaching wasn't accurate or true, but I think the allurement might be, I already feel connection to that and resonate. Let me lean into more of it. And then how sometimes a certain teaching can actually turn us off because it might point out something that maybe we should be looking at and going into, but it creates discomfort. So it's easier to say, that's bullshit.
I think it's important for us to continuously self-audit ourselves and exercise the ideas. Doesn't matter who's teaching us, doesn't matter where we're learning it from. Books, mentors, coaches, whatever it may be. I'm constantly telling my clients to question what I say. Like, it's okay to question what I say. I'm not 100% right. I've been very much wrong before. I will continuously be pushing the boundaries of what I believe in, perhaps my own teachings. And there are going to be times where I'm incorrect. I might have said stuff on this podcast today that in 2 years from now, I go back and go, I wish I could have said that better. I wish I didn't even say that. I don't believe in that anymore. That's okay. I don't think so right now, but there are times where we do have to go back and exercise our own ideas, very much like you exercise a muscle. We need to be able to stress test some of the things that we're learning and ask ourselves, okay, do I connect with this due to the fact that it's what I want to believe, or it's something close to what I've believed before, and go through that process of exercising the idea, audit our own behaviors and understand where is this coming from. That sounds like a lot of work to a lot of people. But the thing is, you spend all day in your head. You're already talking to yourself all day. This goes back to the who are you conversation that I'm sure you've had before on this show, of separating between the person and the consciousness, the awareness, the third party, the witness. And you're always going to have those conversations anyway. So if you're going to instead sit here and, you know, think about that one daydream that you decide to romanticize on all the time, you also have the opportunity to go through the process of, you know, when you're just doing, I would say, low intensity activities where you are having those conversations. Yeah, to be able to go, okay, that's so funny. You know, this thing keeps popping up. I'm noticing this pattern of me gravitating towards this thing. Or, you know, when that person said this thing to me, I noticed this weird feeling, you know, and I kind of felt that crawling up my throat. And I don't know, was that anger? Did I feel judgment? Did I feel like my ego was being pushed? And then become curious. And I think that's really the biggest takeaway for most people is when you do have something come up, become curious of it, not judgmental, not identifying, but when you can start to, maybe you're in the shower and you can start to come back and recollect on it when you're in the place of just starting to learn how to, you know, do these self audits on yourself, become curious of these emotions or these thoughts or whatever starts to come up and go, why is that there? And that's when you can start to kind of break these down a little bit. And essentially this is your own conscious meditation.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, to your point then, curious, not judgmental, because I think maybe the biggest barrier for people to do these types of self audit with that level of awareness is not liking what they see and actually not being able to handle what they might see if they kind of, you know, turn the stone and look underneath it. So if they can come from that place of non-judgment and actually realize that the thing you're seeing isn't who you are, it's just a pattern that may have been formed over time. It's just something that's arising. And in seeing, it's only in seeing it to bring it back to the initial place that you can actually gain that awareness.
Yeah, I don't like to, it's kind of a tricky, but like one thing I do, and this sounds a little schizophrenic, but I like to talk to my person and refer to Denon, you know, as my person. And I'll oftentimes, one thing I do a lot of, and even when it comes back to the conversation we talked about of when you're in the moment, perhaps in a heated conversation with, you know, the missus or the mister, and you start to fall back into all of the self-identifications that you do with the person, the conditioned human mind, we very much disconnect from our conscious self and we go straight into our animalistic reactivity. Totally normal. We feel pressed. Cortisol's on the rise. We start to go into these fight or flight responses. Totally normal. I understand. The better that we can become of controlling that is great. However, one way that we can help to, I would say, emotionally regulate in that moment is, well, there's lots of different ways you can emotionally regulate in that moment. But one way is physical anchoring. So training yourself to always come back to a physical pattern. Maybe you're somebody who keeps a little stone in your pocket at all times, or maybe like I'm wearing a watch right now. One thing that I constantly do, and if you're watching the video of this, I tend to come back to the hand on chest. I'll touch my chest and that's my constant return back. Some people might play with a button on their shirt or just like play with the bezel on their watch, for example. A physical anchor that brings you back into the present so that you don't go too far into just this emotional barrage that you're about to put out. And you can, and that can, another one could be your breath. So one thing that I've done in the past, and I've never actually talked to my partner, my ex-partner about, which would be, she would notice when my breathing would slightly change. And she knew that I was starting to get into a place of like, I'm bordering the wires crossing right now. And that would be, we might be talking and my breathing would become very slow, like almost box breathing of like 5 seconds in, hold, 5 seconds out. And it was almost, nobody in public would ever notice it, but I know they would notice it just slightly. And that's kind of the unsaid cue of like, I'm just holding it together, but I'm trying really hard. And you can see that I'm trying very hard. And not only does it help me, it helps them understand as well. And it's not meant to be the silent communication. It can be, that can be something that you can communicate like, hey, when I'm doing this, it means I'm like very close to becoming reactive, but really doing that for yourself of just slowing it all down, so that you can, we can multitask at all times, but you can, so multitasking can be either the physical anchor of noticing your feet gripping against the floor, or perhaps it is very slow conscious breathing while still listening. Just doing some of those things can help bring us back to the trained reminder of where am I acting from right now?
I love that. And what you said then about, you know, your partner noticing it, I think actually if a man's partner can see that, I think it makes him a lot more trustable to her, because she can see, oh, I see there's something going on here. And he's not just like just going with it and getting lost in it. He's actually being conscious and choosing not to go into it. And I think that creates a lot of trust around safety. And, you know, just to loop it back to the conversation I was having earlier, I was activated. I could feel it. And I was just staying, I have things where sometimes I'll have to close my, have the conversation. I'll just close my eyes and I'll have the conversation from here.
Mm-hmm.
And I will do some of this breathing. And she saw what was going on. And, you know, it's like, and she said, like, it's, she, and bless her, just one of the reasons she's amazing is that she was kind of saying, like, I see how you're feeling. I also see how you're dealing with it. And it's amazing.
Yes.
And then you hear that and it's like, and it starts to go, it creates that upward spiral, because actually, you know, you are dealing with it in a way that a lot of people wouldn't. You're not reacting. You're not just kind of giving into that voice. And then when it's then pointed out and acknowledged, it's really helpful.
Yeah, I think people are scared to do some of these emotional regulation strategies that may be physically viewable. I wouldn't hesitate to talk about these things with your partner and be like, hey, you know, I noticed in these conversations, when we both start to get heated, we don't, for example, this isn't serving for us in a beneficial way. This tends to go down a path where neither of us come out in a way that's actually positively beneficial. So I'm going to try this thing where maybe it is close your eyes, for example, just so you can more focus on the one input, like you talked about. There's millions of inputs in our mind of shapes, colors, all of these things, and then also what they're saying to us, and then how it's bringing up certain emotions in us. Just closing your eyes, that immediately is going to shut off probably, I don't know, 30% of the input. We still have audio, you know, we still have physical, but taking away that input alone, if we talk with your partner about that, hey, when I have this conversation with you, I'm gonna close my eyes next time. Mm. And I know that seems weird. And I know you wouldn't do that in public. And I know you don't want to be judged, for example, by your peer groups or whatever. But what happens inside the walls of the relationship is of no bearing to the outside. And you need to be able to oftentimes, I'm not saying be a nonconformist, but we might need to find untraditional ways of dealing with things. And that's okay. That's very much okay that we do those things inside our own relationship. You can do that with friends as well. I mean, you and I could have a conversation and, like, you know, we could talk about certain ways that we deal with things. And that's totally cool because we are aware of that with each other. And I understand with perhaps more less tapped in people and less conscious individuals, I would say, they might immediately go to, oh, dude, you're such a bitch, or, you know, whatever it may be. That's okay. Maybe those guys aren't for you. Maybe those friends aren't for you. But within your relationship, there's nothing wrong with being a little bit untraditional. I'm trying to find a better word for that. I can't find a better word for that. Untraditional is not the right word, but not being worried about the external societal judgment. It's okay to find ways inside of your own relationship to make those things work. I mean, it's either that or you guys are going to go off the deep end and it's not going to work out. So what would you rather do? Find a little bit of discomfort in the moment in learning how to do a new thing where your relationship or your conversations in the relationship become effective, or the pain of the breakup down the line because you're not willing to find a way that's actually going to work to communicate. So really, I mean, you're picking short-term denial of short-term discomfort for long-term potential of pain. And that's probably the perspective you need to look at there. So find a way to make those conversations work.
I love that, man. Brother, I've just checked the time and we're about there. Thank you so much for doing this today. Can you let people know the best place to find you and for people that resonate with you and want to know more about your work, you as a coach, what's the best way for them to go about it?
Well, if I was more organized and wasn't so busy, I'd have freebie offers and all those fun lead magnets to send you guys, but I don't. All I have is a bunch of free information on the internet for you. So if you head on over to my Instagram, at Denon Maximchuk, I'm not even going to bother try to spell that out for you guys. I got a funny Ukrainian name. So I'm sure we'll put that in the show notes below and you can go and check that out. Try to put a bunch of posts out each week of actionable items that you can either ponder on or inject directly into your life. And I hope those are going to be valuable for you. If you did come follow from this podcast, please send me a message. I'd love to see who's coming on over. And yeah, if you got any suggestions on stuff you'd like to learn, please let me know and I'll try to put that out there. In the future, I will have probably some mini courses coming out for modern relationships, and very excited to start putting those together in the coming weeks here. So yeah, I'm super stoked to be on here, man, and I appreciate you opening up your time and in your community to have me come talk.
Amazing, man. Thank you so much, and I hope we can do it again.
Absolutely, anytime.
Thanks, brother. Thank you so much for watching. I really hope you enjoy that episode with Denon. Again, to find him and myself, the links will be in the description below. And if you haven't yet subscribed to the channel, please do that. And I'll see you on the next one.